everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have another great show planned for you today. My guest will be Gene Bauer. He is the president of Farm Sanctuary and author of a book, new book called Living the Farm Sanctuary Life that came out last year. And it is a wonderful book, and I am really thrilled to have him on, and he'll be on in just a little bit after I share with you some news and some events going on in and around the city. But I want to also share with you, last night I had the fun pleasure of seeing Michael Moore's new film, Where to Invade Next. And I just want to encourage everybody to see it out there. It's really a great film. It's a film, you know, watching him go around to different European countries and highlight what they're doing well that we could really benefit from. You know, when he goes to Italy and he sees, you know, how the Italians are paid, you know, 7 weeks of vacation time and they're given a 13th month salary around the holiday times, that they have money to go on those vacations and to buy gifts. Slovenia, they go and they have free universities. Many of the countries actually have free education. And they were interviewing lots of American students as well who are going over there to take advantage of the free education. It's free even for Americans going over there. They went to Portugal. They went to Finland. Finland has the highest educational rate now. They were on par with U.S., quite low. And they really wanted to do something about it. And, you know, what did they do? They cut the school day to be a little shorter. They didn't give homework. They allowed kids time to play. And I think what the film really just shows is the balance of life and how unbalanced so many of our lives are. Nobody, even the factory workers, they didn't have two jobs. The one job, which was only 36 hours a week, gave them enough money to have a nice life and to enjoy life. And you did not need to have two jobs or three jobs, wear many hats. It was just so sane. And it was really fun, and there was a lot of levity to it. And I really encourage everybody to get out and see it. It's very worthwhile. Lots of good laughs and, you know, making light of some very serious issues, but really good food for thought. So I want to encourage people to do that. Next Tuesday, I will be joining the bus up to Albany to participate in a rally to ask our senators and legislators to pass a bill that will allow us to label genetically modified foods. And as I know many of my listeners know, Monsanto is a huge corporation that has so many ties to government, and that's basically one of the biggest problems with Hillary Clinton is her ties to big corporations and Monsanto. But right now, there was a clause that was put into the Environmental Protection Agency's Toxic Substance Control Act that allows Monsanto to not be sued for all the pollution from all the years and years of PCB pollution in our waterways. And there's, you know, mandates that are mandating states to clean up their water, and they want to hold Monsanto liable. And this is a clause that allows them to not have to take responsibility. And then there's also the other bill being passed in Washington, the Monsanto Protection Act, also known as the DARK Act, that will make it illegal for states to have their own mandatory labeling laws. And so we don't want that to happen. One of the things that I've said so often is Monsanto and these big multi-billion-dollar corporations have so much money and so many ties, and they pay off our officials and make contributions to their campaigns, and we can't compete with that. We don't have that kind of money, but we have numbers of people. However, when I spoke to Food and Water Watch to find out how many people they expect at the rally that next Tuesday, they said 250, and I was like, are you kidding? 250 people throughout the whole state, that's all that can come up and show up to rally for GMO labeling. With those kind of numbers, we're not going to create the movement we need to create, like the People's Climate March. We need millions. We need millions of people. So we really need to get those numbers up. I know how busy everybody is, myself included. I have a million things I'd rather do on Tuesday than go to Albany, but I feel like it's my responsibility to participate in civil action to make our government legislators know that the people, what the people want. And poll after poll, it's obvious that people want labeling on their food. But we just don't have the money to buy the votes. So we need people power. And we really need people to step up. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say about that. But anybody who can join us on Tuesday next week, March 8th, for a rally, there's the buses going to Albany. There's scholarships for the buses if you can't afford it. So please think about joining. Also, this weekend, March 5th and 6th, there's a kids' food feast or fest at Bryant Park. It's all day long from 10 to 4, and it's an opportunity to learn about food education and have fun at the same time. It's a really great family activities. There's cooking classes going on, lots of different things, sampling of really good food, and lots of activities. So if you can get out to Bryant Park this weekend, that's really great. The International Restaurant and Food Service Show also starts this Sunday. For anyone that's interested in the, hospitality industry, food service, or even for lay people, it's really fun. However, it will also be shocking. You won't believe all the crap there. So it's an eye-opener. But that's a fun activity. March 8th is a great event that I want to share with you. It's called the Empty Bowls Event. And it's a fundraiser for the River Fund New York, which is the organization that I partner with during the holidays to feed the homeless. And this is, they are the largest food pantry, or the, I don't know if they're the largest, but they feed and provide food for the most amount of people in New York. Great, great organization. Information about that is on my website, but it will be at Austin's Ale House in Kew Gardens. You pay $15 and you get a handmade ceramic bowl and you fill it with a soup of your choice and some bread and come down with friends. There's three different seatings from a 3 o'clock, a 5 o'clock, and a 7 o'clock. If I get back in time from Albany, I hope to go straight there and join the 7 o'clock seating. So if you can make it, I'll see you there. March 10th through the 13th is a conference in New Orleans called Slow Fish, and that is Slow Foods campaign to raise awareness about the fishing industry and industrialized fishing and how bad it is for the planet. So that's a good event also. March 12th is a free organic gardening workshop taking place in Huntington Station by two wonderful organic farmers, Heather and Larry Foglia. Really great. If you can make it, it's from 10 to 12. It's free. And they are just a wealth of information. And all of this stuff that I'm saying right now is listed on my website, so you can find out more about that. March 11th, you can join my guest, Jean Bauer, at the Farm Sanctuary Dinner. That will be taking place at the Jiva Mukti Cafe and Yoga School in at 841 Broadway. And it's an opportunity to meet Jean Bauer in person and have a wonderful vegan meal. So think about that. March 13th is the Just Food Conference. That's always an unbelievable coming together of community leaders, local food advocates, urban rural farmers, entrepreneurs. It's a great day for panel discussions and workshops and trainings and networking. And that's all day long at the Teachers College, Columbia University. So if you can make that, that's a wonderful thing. And then I want to share with you that the third annual Long Island Film Feast, Food and Film Feast, is coming up on March 20th. And that takes place at the Cinema Arts Center in Long Island. And I am the main organizer of that event. You know, I do it with my local Slow Food chapter, Slow Food North Shore. But I have selected a whole handful of short documentaries and paired them with a speaker and food that is in the documentary. So it's really a fun, wonderful event. It sells out every year. So if you are interested, get your tickets soon. And there's lots of other great things going on, but I don't want to take the time. So like I said, go on to my website at iegreen.com. Check out all the events coming up. And if you have an event that you'd like to share with me, feel free to email me at Bhavani@iegreen.com, and I will add that to the list. I want to share with you a recipe before Jean comes on. This week's recipe is a roasted tempeh with a miso tahini glaze. It was a midweek meal, really quick. And I know for so many of us, getting dinner on the table quickly is really important. So this is a really quick way of getting the tempeh in the oven, and then while the tempeh is roasting, you have time to make the grain and the vegetable to go with it. So it's a great way of preparing the tempeh. And so basically I cut the tempeh in half. You know, most tempeh is coming in an 8-ounce package. And you cut that in half and then cut each half into a triangle, and then take each triangle and divide it horizontally so that you're making each piece a little thinner. And then you end up with 8 pieces of triangles of tempeh. And you're going to brush them with olive oil and put them on a parchment paper lined cookie sheet and bake it in an oven at 400 degrees. And bake it for about 10 minutes until it gets golden brown on all sides. You can turn it halfway through so that the other side gets equally golden brown, and that is helpful. Then you're going to make the glaze while the tempeh is roasting, and the glaze is 2 teaspoons of minced garlic, 2 teaspoons of minced ginger, 2 teaspoons of white miso. If all you have is red miso, that will work just fine as well, 2 teaspoons of tahini, 1 tablespoon of tamari, and 1/2 cup of water. And just pulse that in a mini food processor to make the glaze. If you don't have that, you can certainly just use a whisk in a bowl, and that will work as well. And then when the tempeh is golden brown, you remove it from the oven. You pour 1/2 of the miso tahini glaze on top of the tempeh pieces and put it back in the oven for about another 5 to 10 minutes. Then you remove it and garnish with scallions, and you can serve it with the remaining glaze on the side, which is also a great sauce to put on top of whatever grain you're serving with it, brown rice or quinoa or rice noodles, whatever. And that's it. Really simple, very quick, and quite delicious. So as always, if you make it, give me some feedback. I'd love to hear back from people. Okay, and now it's my pleasure to introduce Jean Bauer, the president of Farm Sanctuary and author of a new book called Living the Farm Sanctuary Life. Jean, are you with me?
Yes, I am. It's great to be with you.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I have wanted to visit the Farm Sanctuary for so long and have yet to get there. So hopefully after this conversation, I will find my way to the Farm Sanctuary. Can you share
that
with my listeners? Can you share with my listeners what the Farm Sanctuary is and where it is and how you came about establishing it?
Yeah, sure. Farm Sanctuary is an organization that works to change how we view and treat farm animals in our society. Most of us grow up without really recognizing the harm caused by animal agriculture, and most people also grow up with the habit of eating meat, milk, and eggs without really thinking about it. And, you know, most Americans are unwittingly supporting an abusive system, horrible cruelty to animals, the destruction of the environment, and harming their own health. So we want people just to be more mindful about their food choices and shift towards eating plants instead of animals. Farm Sanctuary started in 1986, and we started by doing undercover investigations of factory farms, stockyards, slaughterhouses, and we would literally find living animals thrown in trash cans or thrown on piles of dead animals. So we started rescuing them and then ultimately set up 3 sanctuaries. We have one now in Watkinsville, New York, one in Northern California, and one just outside of Los Angeles. And these are sanctuaries for the animals where they are our friends, not our food. And we encourage people to come visit, look into the eyes of a pig, or a cow or a chicken, and just get to know them as individuals. And at Farm Sanctuary, the animals have names. They're not numbers. They are somebody, not something. And we just want people to recognize that, like all animals, farm animals have feelings, and they deserve to be treated with respect.
Mm-hmm. And in your goal of writing Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, this is your second book, correct? Your first one was The Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds About Animals and Food. Is there another one, or
yes,
is it the two?
That's correct. There are two books.
Yeah.
The first
uh-huh.
one came out in 2008, and the most recent one came out last year.
And so can you tell us what Living the Farm Sanctuary Life book has in it that you want to share with us?
Yes, absolutely. Living the Farm Sanctuary Life is a book that talks about how to take steps towards living more compassionately with a lighter footprint on the planet that is healthier. And so there's information there about the health benefits of eating plants instead of animals, about the environmental benefits. There's lots of beautiful pictures of people and animals interacting in positive ways. There are 100 recipes from some of the top vegan chefs and cookbook authors that were contributed for the book. So it helps people take steps. There's information there about setting up a vegan kitchen, about some ingredients that you might want to have on hand, about how to live this life. The first book, Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds About Animals and Food, was largely about the issues, about our investigations, about the history of Farm Sanctuary. So it's also a really good book, and it kind of lays out why we need to reform this agribusiness system and how consumers have the power to make changes. In mm-hmm. Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, we empower consumers and citizens to make choices, to live more mindfully in a healthier way that's not causing harm to the planet. And, you know, I often think and ask the question, if we can live well without causing unnecessary harm, why wouldn't we? And,
right.
and that's really the spirit that goes through both books. And it just encourages people to think and then to make choices that are aligned with their own values, because most people are humane and don't like cruelty. So if we live in a way aligned with our values, we would see a big shift. And also to live in a way that is aligned with our interests. It's not in our interest to support a food industry that's destroying the planet, contributing more to climate change, in fact, in the entire transportation industry. So we just want people to think about their choices and be mindful, and then ultimately to make choices that are aligned with their own values and their own interests.
Right. Well, that's one of the things that I love so much about food, is that it really bridges everybody together. Everybody eats, and it's something that we all do, and we all, well, most of us, most of the people I know anyway, care about our planet and care about our health and care about, you know, people who don't have enough. And most people care about these things, and, you know, eating in a compassionate way really touches on all those things. I was wondering if you could share a little bit more the environmental impact of eating a vegan diet, how that impacts
our
environment.
Well, in order absolutely. Well, in order to raise animals for food, we need to grow tons and tons of feed. So the vast majority of the acreage in the U.S. and around the world that is farmed is being used for animal agriculture. And in the U.S., for example, 90% of the corn, or rather 90% of the soy, and 70% of the corn is used in animal agriculture. And, you know, if we were eating plants directly, we could feed far more people, about 10 times more people, than raising plants, harvesting the plants, feeding them to animals, then raising and slaughtering the animals and eating the animals. So it's very inefficient. And if we want to feed people, the best way to do that is to grow plants directly and eat them instead of growing them to feed animals. It also requires far more water resources to grow and produce animal foods as opposed to growing plants. It takes far more fossil fuels. There was a New York Times article a few years back that talked about and compared the amount of fossil fuels needed for a meat meal versus a vegetarian meal. And the author concluded it took 16 times more fossil fuels for the meat meal as compared to the vegetarian meal. So there's these enormous environmental costs, the squandering of scarce resources, and then there's enormous amounts of pollution. You know, when you have a factory farm with thousands of animals, or in some cases millions of animals, in a close area, they generate enormous quantities of manure, which then gets into the environment. It pollutes waterways. And in some cases, you even have groundwater that's being polluted, not only with bacteria from feces, but with antibiotic-resistant bacteria, because the vast majority of antibiotics used in the United States are fed to farm animals to keep them alive in these filthy factory farms and to make them grow faster. So,
right.
You know, this is an industry that is terrible across the board. And then it does something to our humanity. Can you imagine what it would be like to work in a slaughterhouse where for 8 hours a day your job is cutting the throats of animals?
I can't imagine.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good for people either. You know, this is obviously horrible for animals, but it's also bad for people. And the good news is we don't have to be part of it. We can decide that we do not want to participate in this cruel system, that we want to support farmers markets, community-supported agriculture programs, community gardening projects, things like that, that are more respectful to the earth, that allow us to eat healthy plant foods without requiring us to violently kill other animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, when you talk about the animal waste, I was shocked to find out that there's no treatment plant for that either, that doesn't go through any type of processing to clean it up before they put it into the water. You know, can you imagine if, you know, human waste wasn't treated first? You know, it's just, it's amazing. And then you talk about the antibiotics and the hormones and the genetically modified feed. I mean, all the soybeans and the corn that are being fed to the animals are genetically modified. And so when people eat animals that are raised in that way, they're also ingesting the hormones and the antibiotics and the GMOs.
Yes, we are what we eat, and our food system is a mess, and it's having a negative impact on us. And eating whole foods, eating plant foods, eating organic foods serves the earth well, and it serves us well.
Mm-hmm. How did your journey start? Was it something that you just woke up and, you know, decided, or was it a more gradual thing? I know, you know, for me, exactly when I read Diet for a Small Planet, I was 16, and I, you know, haven't had a piece of meat since. Although I do still eat, I do still eat some dairy, but you know, I know that I agree with you that that eating vegan is certainly better. So for you,
yeah.
Was it gradual or is it immediate?
Well, for me, it was a process. It started in high school when my grandmother told me about how veal calves are raised. So I stopped eating veal immediately eaten it since. And then I also read Diet for a Small Planet and learned about the inefficiencies of animal agriculture, which had a big impact on me.
Frances Moratte was so ahead of her time, wasn't she? I mean,
she sure
that was.
Was
such a
yeah.
great book, and it, I think,
Absolutely.
Affected so many people.
Yes, it made a big difference. And then another book that came out in the mid-1980s that was also, I think, very impactful was called Diet for a New America by John
mm-hmm.
Robbins, and that
right.
also reached many people with the issues of animal cruelty, human health impacts of animal agriculture, and the environmental problems associated with it. But so for me, it was learning more about the issues and then ultimately recognizing that it was possible for me to live well and to thrive on a vegan lifestyle. Because, you know, we're bombarded growing up with these ideas that you need to have meat for protein, for example. And that's a complete myth. Or that you need to drink cow's milk in order to get enough calcium so you don't get osteoporosis, which is also a complete myth. And if you look
Correct.
At our country, we drink a lot of cow's milk, and we also get a lot of osteoporosis. So drinking cow's milk clearly doesn't prevent that problem. So just recognizing that this was a choice, that it was possible for me to live as a vegan, was key. And that happened in the early, mid-1980s. I went vegan in 1985 and co-founded Farm Sanctuary in 1986. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we started doing investigations to see what was happening firsthand at these different farms, stockyards, and slaughterhouses. And that has just continuously cemented my and validated my feeling about being a vegan, that this is an industry that is horrendous, and I don't want to have any part in supporting it. And, in fact, I want to do everything I can to change it.
Mm-hmm. And in your experience, do you find that trying to encourage people to transition towards a vegan diet in a more gradual way, or do you think it's that it works better when you, you know, shock someone into it and they immediately just become vegan? What's your experience with that?
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody is an individual, and each person is going to react in their own personal way. And for some people, it is an immediate shift, you know, like a switch goes on, and they change from eating meat to being vegan overnight. But that's relatively rare. And also, there's been some research indicating that when people do it quickly, they're also more likely not to stay with it. I think most people change incrementally and start hearing about factory farming and hearing about the cruelties and the abuses and the waste and the harm and the problems with animal agriculture. And a lot of people now are buying what they think is humane meat. You know, so this is kind of where a lot of discussion is now, where people don't want to get fast food animal products, but are instead going and paying more for animal foods that they think are coming from animals that are treated less badly. But, you know, a lot of those labels, like free range, for example, tend to sound a lot better than they are. And these animals are still, in many cases, basically factory farmed, and they're being sold as free range or humane. In the case of free range, for example, it only requires that animals be given access to the outdoors. But that's not well defined. So you often have animals raised by the thousands in a warehouse with a little door that goes to a crummy little paddock outside, and that is technically access to the outdoors.
Right, so and their breasts are so big they can't walk to get to the outside, so they don't even go.
Yep. You're absolutely right. And, you know, in the case of chickens, for example, in Turkey, they've been genetically bred to grow twice as big and twice as fast as normal. So there are inherent problems that these animals experience, and they suffer, even if they're so-called free range. In the case of turkey, they've been so profoundly altered genetically that they cannot even reproduce naturally anymore. So this is the kind of situation that you have where people are starting to think and don't like the system when they learn more about it, and many then start buying animal foods from farms where the products are labeled to sound better. And those are steps, but they're really not enough. And I think when people get to know more about that whole system and about how these labels are misleading, more and more are moving towards eating more plants. So it's a gradual process. You know, people start eating fewer animal products when they hear about factory farming, and they're spending more money on so-called humane or organic meat. And then as they eat fewer animal foods, they become more comfortable with more plant foods. They start using tofu, tempeh. You know, they learn about nutritional yeast, the kind of new vegan cheeses that are coming on the market now, alternatives to cow's milk, and there's tons and tons of those now. And people just start substituting and changing in the direction of more plants. And then ultimately, hopefully, a lot of those individuals will become vegan. And I think that's the way the process usually works. And also, we are social animals. So it's very important to have social support and to know what to do. So knowing another vegan really makes it a lot easier for somebody to become a vegan. And I think everybody who is vegan can play an important role in helping to nurture and support people moving in that direction. You know, having people over for dinner and cooking together, for example, is a great way to teach others about the kind of vegan food that is you can make, and that teaching people how to make it empowers them. And I think that's where a lot of opportunity exists to create positive change through person-to-person contact.
Yeah, I so much agree with you. I mean, I think one of the things that that we struggle with in our society is, as you mentioned earlier, people are so used to grabbing fast food, grabbing, you know, getting things on the run. And, you know, I was down at the Envision Festival last week which is a big yoga music festival, and I went down to teach some vegan cooking classes there. And the kids there are used to grabbing chia bars and grabbing a cacao this and a coconut water, and they're still not, they still are not familiar with cooking. And a lot of times when people become vegan and they, you know, when they first start, they don't really know about the nutritional aspect of it. And they're just, you know, moving towards veganism from the compassionate side, which is wonderful, but they also need to learn about the nutritional side, because you do need to, you know, add other things into your diets for the protein. I mean, granted, we don't need the quantity of protein that we were raised to believe we need.
Right.
Or milk, like you were saying. I mean, certainly you can get more calcium from kale than you can from milk. So,
right.
You know, but people need to learn this and learn how to cook. And just that conviviality that happens around a table when people cook together is so important. I also feel like, you know, when you're talking about a compassionate diet, you also have to be compassionate when trying to transition someone over. Because I've been doing this for so long, and I think, and I, as you have, and if we come on too strong, you can scare people away. You know, you kind of have to win them over with sweetness.
Yeah, absolutely agree. You know, you ultimately have to speak to people where they are on their own journeys and encourage and support positive steps. You know, if it's an all or nothing proposition, you know, for a lot of people, they're going to be frightened away and they will do nothing. So if you encourage people to take steps, that usually, and build momentum, that can create enormous change over time. And I think, you know, as you were saying before, you know, getting together around a table and eating is such an important human activity that we have been engaged in forever. And in fact, the word comida, the Spanish word comida for food, means, is related to the word community. And, you know, we break bread together. And that's why becoming vegan in some ways can be a challenge socially, because now when you go out to eat, you know, you're the one that is eating different than everybody else. And we ultimately want to be among our kin. We want to be in a community with like-minded people. We want to support each other. And when you eat differently, it can sometimes create this a barrier or a perceived barrier.
Right.
So just recognizing that and then ultimately finding the common ground, though. And the good news is that even people that are not vegans are still eating a lot of vegan food in most cases. You know, eating vegetables, you know, most people eat vegetables or potatoes or fruit or cereal, you know. So people are already eating a lot of vegan food, and just reminding them that makes it less difficult to consider changing to becoming completely vegan. So I think that how we relate to others and how we represent the vegan lifestyle is very important, and it can be either more or less positive in terms of influencing others. And I think, you know, my tendency is to try to find common ground and build from there. And, you know, the good news is most people don't like cruelty, so that's very much common ground. Most people don't like an agricultural system destroying the planet. That's common ground. Most people want to be healthy. So there's all these things that vegans have to work with, and we need to just be persistent in our message, but also gentle and compassionate and understanding that, you know, people are afraid of change in many cases. And to the extent we can make the change less scary and easier, that will, I think, help people go in the positive direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. And I think people want to do the right thing, but they, you know, don't want to be heavily judged. And habit and what we're used to plays such a big role in how we eat. You know, it's so often it's mindless, not mindful. And, you know, I think that's...
Now, what you were saying earlier about how we grab things and eat them on the run, that's another problem. And the slow food movement, I think, is trying to combat that, and I think that's a very good thing. You know, of course, too often the slow food movement is still for eating animal food, but the general concept of slowing down and paying attention to your food, I think, is a very positive one. And I think in the vegan movement now we have a real culinary explosion of incredible restaurants and chefs putting together amazing dishes and demonstrating that vegan food can be tasty, can be satisfying, can be fun. And that's why in the book, Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, I wanted to include so many recipes just to show the variety and how enjoyable vegan food is.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. I agree. Let's take a couple minute break. And when we come back, I want to talk about how this cruelty-free diet can actually go beyond just your diet. And, you know, the fashion industry now is really getting wind of this. And, you know, there's a lot more choices. So when we come back, let's talk a little bit about that. Everyone, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network with Jean Bauer, president of the Farm Sanctuary. Be right back.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Dr. Cheryl Selman, the host of What Women Must Know. As a naturopathic doctor, psychotherapist, author, and women's health advocate, I've discovered that there is a lot that women must know when it comes to their health and hormones. So whatever your hormonal or health challenge may be, the answers are waiting for you at What Women Must Know. Where leading authors and holistic practitioners, researchers, and wise elders will give you the keys to getting your hormones back on track naturally. Be sure to listen every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM. And if you didn't catch it live, you can listen 24/7 on the archive. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hi there, this is Harvey Wasserman. I am the host of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, which airs every Monday at 3 p.m. at PRN.FM. We cover the great issues of your health and wellness, of the health and wellness of the planet, of moving ahead towards a Solartopian, green-powered, holistic Earth. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
I'm Sam Thurman of A Just Cause Coast to Coast. Join me along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez right here on Progressive Radio Network, that's PRN.FM, each Sunday morning from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time for A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice.
PRN. Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm here with my guest, Jean Bauer, president of the Farm Sanctuary and author of Living the Farm Sanctuary Life. And we're talking about veganism and living a compassionate lifestyle. And right before the break, I wanted to touch on fashion and what you wear, because I know that eating a vegan diet is only one aspect of a cruelty-free lifestyle. So much of what we wear is also on the backs of animals that have been slaughtered. So, Gina, are you with me?
Yes, I sure am. And I completely agree with what you just said about what we wear also makes a difference.
It does. And, you know, it used to be so hard. And just like with the food industry really embracing an ethical choice, fashion is also now looking at this, and there's really some really great options out there for people who don't want to wear animals on their backs. So can you share with us a little bit how you see that going?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, there's been a long time effort to expose the cruelty of the fur industry, which is, I think, a very good thing. It's also important to recognize that leather is a result of horrible cruelty, and sometimes people justify using leather with this idea that, well, the cows are being killed anyway, and so the hide has to be used somehow. But the hide is oftentimes an important part of the profit structure of the slaughter industry. So by purchasing and using leather, we're supporting the killing of animals, and we don't need to do that. In the fashion industry, just like in the food industry, I think we now see a shift towards really high-end fashion and demonstrating that cruelty-free fibers and non-animal-based techniques can be used to produce really high fashion. You know, Stella McCartney, for example, does all kinds of great vegan stuff, and there are others as well. So it's an evolving, exciting area, and it's very, very good to see.
Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing that I always want to be careful about is not, I don't want to necessarily support anything that's too exclusive so that it's not inclusive, meaning, you know, if it becomes too high fashion and then it's unaffordable, it doesn't really help people that are trying to eat and act in a more conscious way. So it's, you know, there's always that balance as well, you know, finding the high fashion that's not going to break the bank.
Yes.
And I was just wondering, have you found, because I certainly found alternatives, as far as I'm concerned, you know, you don't need fur coat, leather pocketbooks, any of that. But I'm still personally challenged in finding good shoes, other than, of course, sneakers. What have you seen any faux leather boots out there that are worthy that you want to share with people?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's lots of them. And as you mentioned, though, some of them are more high-end. But you can actually go to places like Payless Shoes and get some vegan shoes, you know. And there's other issues associated with, you know, that kind of market. But, you know, there's something for everybody in all areas. And I actually just was reading this morning that just Hampton Creek, which is a food manufacturing company that came up with a product called Just Mayo. It's a vegan mayonnaise.
Oh, I love that.
Uh-huh. Expanding.
Right.
They're expanding, and they're going to be in Target and Walmart with not only the vegan mayonnaise, but many other vegan products that are going to be, I think, very affordable. So
they actually came out with a scrambled egg.
Yes. That's right.
They've come out with something that is as close to a scrambled egg as you could imagine that is vegan.
That's right. That's right. So they're developing that now. And
right.
So it's really, you know, so a lot of the things people say they miss when they go vegan, actually there's not that many things people miss, but one of them is often cheese. But there are now all kinds of great cheeses that are being developed. You know, Miyoko's Kitchen, for example.
Oh, Miyoko is great. Yeah.
Amazing. So there's starting to be these incredible alternatives to animal products in the food realm, but also in the fashion realm. And in some cases, they're more high-end for a high-end market. In other cases, they're very affordable. So there's something for everybody, whether it's in the fashion world or in the food world. And it's a very exciting time. There are many vegan entrepreneurs out there. There are vegan restaurants, vegan cafes, and there again, you have the high-end places, and then you also have even vegan fast food almost. There's a place called Veggie Grill, for example, mainly on the West Coast, but they're spreading, and it's vegan fast food, essentially. And so there's all sorts of ways now for people to delve into and explore plant-based living. And it's never been a better time to be vegan.
I agree with you. It's much, much easier. I know, you know, lots of public figures now, Bill Clinton being one of them, has become vegan. Biz Stone, the co-founder of Twitter, has become vegan after visiting the farm sanctuary. Do you feel like getting people to visit the farm sanctuary is a good step in trying to change their opinion and transition them to
absolutely
a vegan lifestyle?
Yeah, when people come and visit Farm Sanctuary, they get to recognize and spend time with farm animals as individuals and see that they're not that different than cats or dogs. You know, pigs, for example, really love belly rubs, and so you walk up to a 500-pound pig and you touch their tummy and they'll flop over for a belly rub like a puppy dog. We have turkeys that will follow you around. They're very friendly, and they like human companionship. We have sheep who like to be petted. So, you know, you're petting them, and as you walk away, they will sometimes paw at you like a dog will paw at you because they want you to keep petting them. So these animals are not that different than cats and dogs, and people get a chance to meet them and see them as individuals, and that does have a big effect. And so and there's more and more sanctuaries popping up as well. So there's more and more opportunities for people to visit and get to know animals in their communities. So mm-hmm. we're in the midst of this movement. There's a farm animal sanctuary movement. There's a vegan movement. There's a food movement. There's a fashion movement. And it's moving in the direction of aligning people's values and interests with their consumer choices. And people want to support industries and businesses and practices that they feel good about. And that gives me a lot of hope because, you know, the factory farming industry is indefensible when people pay attention to it. And people are starting to pay more attention. And so we're now in the midst of this food movement. And, you know, farmers markets are spreading. CSA, community supported agriculture programs, are spreading. And there's lots of entrepreneurs, you know, doing their own thing to advance the cause.
Mm-hmm. And what do you, what is your opinion when people say, you know, that they're, you know, not buying industrially raised meat anymore, but they're only getting meat that's raised in a sustainable way? Do you believe
that
there is such a thing? And, And is that better? I mean, if somebody is going to still eat meat, are they doing better if they buy meat that is supposedly raised in a sustainable way?
Yeah, this is often a thing that now comes up. People say, I hate factory farming. I would never buy factory farm meat. I only buy, you know, free range, they'll say, for example. And then what I will often say in response is, that's great that you're against factory farming. We're completely on the same page with that. And then I'll ask, now, what do you mean by free range? Have you been to these farms? Because a lot of times people haven't really thought that much about it. They just want to believe and assume that free range means it's so-called humane. And so that I oftentimes ask people questions just to encourage them to think about these issues, because I think if instead I said, well, there's, you know, free range is just like factory farming, it might put up a wall instead of engaging a discussion. But
right.
At the end of the day, you know, even if animals are treated better, and in most cases they're not treated much better if they're treated better at all, but even if they are treated well and have a decent life, I ask people to think about the word humane and the word slaughter and ask whether those words fit well together. And if you think about it objectively, the word humane and the word slaughter don't fit very well together. So that is ultimately kind of, you know, a fundamental question about whether or not we should be killing and eating other animals for our pleasure, because essentially we don't need to do it for our survival, especially in this day and age when we can produce so much food, and we can actually produce more food if we eat plants instead of animals. So, but it's a process people are in the midst of, and I just want to nurture steps in the direction of eating more plants and moving away from eating animal products. Oftentimes when people say they only, you know, buy free range, they're in a process and they are taking steps. So I just want to help them take more steps and further steps. And you ask if that is better than buying factory farm meat. I would frame it more in that if the animals are treated less badly, it's less bad. But if we're killing them unnecessarily, it's still not good.
Right, right. That makes sense. Yeah, because I hear that all the time, you know, and you go to Whole Foods and they have this whole rating system now, you know, so that there's organic, but sometimes the local is rated better than the organic, or, you know, somebody says they raise it in a sustainable way, it's not organic because they don't want to subscribe to, you know, all the rigmarole of getting licensed, but that they, you know, live in on a farm and they're outdoors and they're, you know, but like you said, they're still, at the end of the day, being slaughtered for someone's food.
That's right. And also, when you go to retail stores, you know, and it says they're outdoors and have good lives, those labels tend to sound better than they are. And so that's just a whole other part of that to be aware of. There's not an infrastructure in place to police these farms, and food retailers don't really have much of an economic interest in exposing the bad practices that exist on these so-called humane farms. So you have a situation there where consumers want to believe they're doing something humane, and retailers want them to believe they're doing something humane. So there's not, you know, it takes some real energy to expose that. And people taking steps is good, you know, but a lot of times these products sound a lot better than they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So this is actually the Farm Sanctuary's 30th anniversary year, correct?
That is correct. We were founded in 1986, so 2016 is our 30th anniversary.
So I was on your website, and I saw that you were having this dinner in New York. Are you traveling? Are you doing a tour of visits to many cities, or is it just in New York? What is going on
year? I'm traveling all over the U.S., talking to people about these issues and encouraging people to become more mindful about their food choices, to visit Farm Sanctuary, to support our work, to get a copy of the book, Living the Farm Sanctuary Life. I'm going to be speaking at Jiva Mukti Cafe on March 11th. I actually believe that's sold out at this point, but I'm speaking at other things, and I'll be back in New York, I'm sure, later on this year. We're going to be doing a gala in Los Angeles in November to celebrate our 30th anniversary. We had one last fall in New York City, and it was amazing. It was at Plaza Hotel. John Stewart and Tracy Stewart were there, as was Senator Cory Booker. And it was just a wonderful event, and we are going to be doing something similar in Los Angeles later this year to celebrate our 30th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. So how do people find out about you? Just go onto your website, and they could find the tour there?
Yeah, go to farmsanctuary.org. There's lots of information there. People can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and you know, just pay attention to the way we live and eat, and Farm Sanctuary is here to support positive steps in a more humane direction.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I also wanted to share with everyone that's listening that just using the internet, like if you want to substitute cheese for a recipe, you know, there's so many, the internet's just amazing like that, because you can just go on and just say, you know, vegan cheese, and you'll come up with all these different recipes, ways that you can substitute, you know, cashew cream for ricotta cheese in your lasagna, or a tofu cheese. You know, it's just amazing. So it's like you were saying,
right.
Gene,
yep.
It's so much easier than it used to be. I mean, you know, from someone that's been doing it for so long, it's just gotten so much easier, so much easier.
I completely agree, and the internet is an amazing tool. You can, like you said, Google vegan cheese or vegan lasagna or vegan recipes, and there are so much great information available online, very easy to get.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to share with my listeners before we run out of time?
Well, I would just say go to our website, farmsanctuary.org. Please pick up a copy of the book, Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, and use that to take positive steps and to make some great vegan food with the 100 recipes that are there.
And the one other thing I'd like to touch on that you touched on is finding that common ground. I just think that that is just such an essential part of working with people in this transition, because there is so much common ground, and people that are meat eaters are not that different. You know, they just I don't think they've also had really good food. I have to say, as a chef, that's one of the things that blows me away so much, is when I go to vegan events and there is so much not tasteful food, so much food that is not very good. And I think, you know, I think to myself, like, oh, my God, this, you know, people's standards and expectation is so low. And I really encourage people not to lower your expectations. There's no reason that a vegan meal should be any less delicious and satisfying than a meat meal. And yet, if it is, then you're eating at the wrong place, or you need to work on your recipe a little bit more or something, because, you know, I know... You know, I do not deprive myself of any flavor when I want a vegan meal. You know, it's full flavored, it's full fat. I mean, you know, it depends on, you know, what you're doing. If you're doing a cleansing diet, it's going to be different than if you're, you know, but you can make an unbelievable vegan lasagna with cashew cream that is so rich and delicious. You do not even, could not even imagine the cheese is missing from it, you know?
No, I completely agree with that. And this is where vegan culinary art is really beginning to show itself. And you have incredible chefs, incredible dishes, and you don't give up any taste or flavor or texture or satisfaction at all by eating plant foods. And I think the game has been upped, and more chefs are rising to the occasion.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, it's really exciting. Everybody out there, thank you for joining us. Jean, thank you so much for coming on this week and sharing your passion with everybody. It's really inspirational. And keep up the good work, and thank you for spreading the word. It's
absolutely
really important.
Absolutely. Very happy to do that. And try to visit Farm Sanctuary if you get a chance. Thank you
I
all
will.
Very much.
Thanks. Everyone out there, thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. See you again next week. Bye for now.